You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. With more than 40% of marriages ending in divorce in the United States and percentages rising in countries like South Korea, Iran, and India, many people are taking another look at whether arranged marriages produce stronger relationships. WNYC reporter Arun Venugopal examined this controversial issue in his story, The Case for Arranged Marriage, as part of the Micropolis series. Joining the conversation is Frady Reiss, founder and executive director of Unchained at Last, an organization helping women who want to leave arranged marriages and make a fresh start. I'm pleased to welcome Arun and Frady to the show. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks. Thank
you. So you guys are not on opposite sides of this divide, but Arun, you did this this report, and so you've been delving into this topic. I'm fascinated by this subject. About a year ago, I was interviewing, or last fall, I was interviewing Aziz Ansari, mm-hmm. the comedian, and he told me he's, you know, of Indian descent. He told me that his parents have a very, very happy marriage, arranged marriage, and it just sort of came as a bolt out of the blue that, like, some people, you know, this is working out great for them. And obviously, Frady, there are cases where it doesn't work out, which you're going to talk about. But Arun, I'm wondering, in which cultures are arranged marriages the most common?
You know, I don't know if there's any data that actually says, that quantifies this. This is still sort of a relatively new field when it comes to sociologists and others who are trying to figure out how good arranged marriages are, how common they are. And I think partly the problem is that when we think of arranged marriage, we probably think, oh, like your parents show up one day and say, hey, guess what? We found you a guy. Next Saturday, show up and, you know, you're going to get married. And
right.
I think that actually there's such a range of what arranged marriage can mean. It can mean a very strict and traditional sort of interpretation. And it can mean something where, you know, your family, your friends, your aunties and uncles, they all kind of chip in and they try to, like, set you up. And so we don't really know, I guess. I mean, certainly countries like India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, parts of the Middle East, parts of Africa, Korea, of course, Orthodox Jews, it's very common. And these go from those traditional things to very contemporary settings where it's basically more like assisted marriage.
Assisted marriage.
I think that's the new catchphrase.
Is that?
Yeah.
Now, you're Indian-American. Are there arranged marriages in your family?
Oh, I'd say, okay, so I have like 22 first cousins and about 12 aunts and uncles, if you my mom and dad's side. I'd say probably 70, 80% of all those, maybe more, are arranged marriages. I mean, almost all the people who are in India have had arranged marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you have any personal assessment of how those marriages are working out?
I it's just been so normal. I mean, I don't think that I could distinguish if one of them said, actually, you know what? Because it's more like in some cultures, it's like, well, I've got to confess, I didn't have an arranged marriage. It's sort of like the deep secret of some marriages. And you can't tell the difference in a lot of these. I mean, they seem perfectly happy. They seem to have the same kinds of fights and annoyances with each other that any other marriage would have. And I think that's what some of the research has suggested, is that basically when it comes to things like satisfaction and harmony and you know, love, that it's not a huge difference. But of course, these are studies which are, you know, pretty narrow so far. So I think it's too early to say definitively that one is better than the other.
Now, India has one of the lowest divorce rates in the world. Is that correct?
I've heard that too. Yeah, like,
so
very low.
So is there a correlation between the high rate of arranged marriage and the low divorce rate, or is it more that there's a stigma attached to divorce that's keeping these relationships together?
I think it's both. I mean, basically, you definitely have these marriage is such an important thing, and staying in that marriage. And I mean, you have differences depending on the region of the country, the community. In my own community, in Kerala, South India, the Nair community, it's a pretty large community, and their tradition is a lot looser. I mean, historically, there was sort of like, I guess, a saying of sorts that, like, yeah, when the woman is no longer interested in staying with the guy, she basically just puts his sandals outside. And it's like, that's it. See, it's like her Dear John.
It's really what she put the sandals outside?
That's what we understand it. And so basically you have certain communities which are much more, I guess you could say, There's a much greater sense of, I guess, equality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's problems. I mean, I think it's all relative. But then you have other communities where it's very difficult to leave, and there's a lot of pressure. And so even nowadays when people say, oh, yeah, you know, I was able to choose, I had a choice in an arranged marriage, I think some people say, well, how much choice did you really have? You know,
right.
After the third or fourth guy you've said no to, your parents may very well start saying, come on, all right, you're not getting any younger, that kind of a thing.
Now, Frady, you grew up in the Orthodox Jewish community. And how old were you when you got married?
I was 19. And so typically in the ultra-Orthodox community, in the non-Hasidic segment of it, which is where I was from, girls will get married at about 18. So I was a little bit old.
And what did your family look for in a potential husband?
What did my family look for? I mean, obviously, looking out for my best interests, I would definitely say my mother wanted me to be happy. But, you know, I was from a very poor family, and my parents were divorced, which was very uncommon back then. So I didn't have a whole lot of options. There weren't a whole lot of people. There weren't a lot of matchmakers who would work with me, and there weren't a whole lot of boys whose parents would agree to let their son so-called date me, if you can call what goes on there dating.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, the man I did marry, you know, his father was very against the fact. His father at first was very against the match because of my family background.
Mm-hmm. He was against. So how did it go forward if there was some objection on his part?
Well, somebody convinced him. I guess the matchmaker did her job.
So what is the role of these matchmakers in the Orthodox community? Are they who becomes a matchmaker, and what kind of a career is that? Are they paid to do this, or what? How does it work?
Are you looking for a new career?
Well, you never know.
So some of them are professionals, but often they're just, I'm sure you know people who just like matching people up. And this is a good way in the Orthodox community to make some extra money. So in my case, for example, it was my mother's first cousin.
Mm-hmm. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and I am talking to Arun Venugopal and Frady Rees, and we were talking about the successes and pitfalls of arranged marriage. So how long, Frady, getting back to your story, because now I'm on the edge of my chair, how long were you married to this gentleman?
I was married for a total of 12 years, but mm-hmm. most of that is because it was just so difficult. And as everyone was saying before, I mean, in most of the communities that practice arranged marriage, and I call it arranged or forced marriage because, you know, often it's difficult to differentiate between an arranged and a forced marriage. But in many of the communities that practice this, divorce is very, very difficult. There are often religious laws and social customs that make divorce difficult, especially for women. And so that's why I think low divorce rate is really not a good way to measure success of happiness and marriage happiness, because very often people are staying married just because they have no choice.
Right. Now, pardon me for asking a personal question, but how long into the marriage did you know it wasn't going to work out, and why? What was your reason?
It was 1 week.
And, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I was 19, married for 1 week to somebody who is basically a stranger to me. I knew him for a total of about 3 months before I became his wife. And he woke up late one morning and was so angry and frustrated that he was late that he started screaming and cursing and really terrifying me. And I was kind of cowering in the corner. And then he, in a fit of rage, punched his fist through the wall, left a big hole in the sheetrock, and ran out. And that was when I knew.
Mm.
But, you know, under Jewish law, a woman doesn't have the right to divorce her husband. There's very little understanding of domestic violence in that community. Divorce is very shameful in that community. So there was my family didn't support my decision to leave. So it took me 12 years till I finally got out.
When did you first speak out and say, I want to get a divorce? I know it then becomes an incredibly complicated and difficult process for a woman. But when from that moment, 1 week in, when did you decide this? When did you tell others that you wanted to get out?
Well, at first I kept it quiet. It's obviously very shameful, especially
right.
in these communities. But I think in every community, I think it's embarrassing to admit, hey, you know, this man that I married is not working out. But it was probably, you know, within a few months that I started asking my family and his family and rabbis for help. But it wasn't until I was 27 that I actually realized after trying to take several steps, including going to the police to get a restraining order and having the rabbis force me to withdraw that, that I realized that I needed to get out on my own. And that was when I started, you know, making plans to get out on my own, which took 5 years. It was my 5-year plan, including going to college.
Mm. And you have to obtain the Jewish divorce document, which is called a get. How does that? I've seen it portrayed in a lot of film and TV as an incredibly hard thing for a woman. What was it actually like to obtain a get?
I can't answer that personally, because what I did was I completely bypassed that process.
And
I said, I don't want anything to do with such a misogynistic process.
You're just going
to
do it legally.
Exactly.
According to the secular laws.
Right. Yeah. Went to civil court and got divorced there. But typically what happens is a woman can ask her husband for a get, a Jewish divorce, but he can either just say no, or he can make outrageous demands, any demands he wants in return. So he can say, like the recent New York Times story, I'm sure a lot of people have seen, $5 million, custody of the children if you want your get.
Mm-hmm.
And then a woman whose husband won't give her a get becomes an aguna, literally a chained woman. She's forever chained to this marriage, can't move on, can't remarry, and remains forever single in a community where being single is considered very shameful.
Mm-hmm. And you had 2 children.
Yes. Right?
How did the custody of the kids play out?
Well, I got lucky. I got full custody of my 2 daughters. But, you know, my divorce took 3.5 years, but my ex-husband gave up the fight for custody pretty early on. But there are, unfortunately, a lot of cases where women who are leaving these marriages will end up losing custody of their children for various very unfair reasons.
Have you stayed connected to the community through all this, or did this cause a rift?
Well, my family declared me dead, so I have absolutely, they've completely shunned me and cut me off. I have a final restraining order against my ex-husband, so there's no contact there. So my only contact with the community is with the women who come forward to Unchained at Last, asking for help leaving their arranged or forced marriage.
So Arun, now with that story behind us.
Good luck, Arun.
Good luck. Now we're going to go back to Subway. But to make it clear, you're not a salesman for arranged marriages. You did a story about it, so we're not trying to paint you as like a now from the other side.
Thank you, Eddie.
But you did speak when you were doing your Micropolis story. You did speak to some advocates for successful, who've talked about successful arranged marriages. What would they point to in its defense, since we've heard some good arguments against it?
I think some of them will acknowledge that there are bad marriages that people enter into, and some of them will downplay, I guess, the frequency with which that happens. I think what they're looking at more broadly is that, if you look in New York City or if you look at America in general, there are a lot of people who don't end up, getting married and they often want to get married. They want to find somebody. And I think that what they're saying is that if you don't have help, if you don't have your family, your community involved, trying to help you sort of screen out those applicants or just introduce you to various people, then it's a lot harder to find somebody. And I think especially just the way urban culture is, people have very busy careers and sometimes these things can take a back seat. And they're saying, people, we don't want our kids to either let their heart dictate completely these important choices, or we don't want them just to be alone. I mean, they feel sad when they see that sometimes their kids end up, unmarried. I mean, I have lots of friends who are, I think on paper and otherwise are very eligible people, and you kind of wonder, and that's part of what the story is trying to look at, is why are there single people who seem to be highly eligible, great jobs, great personalities, good-looking people who don't end up finding people. And I think that's, for me, arranged marriage isn't so much about this sort of very traditional institution, but how do you essentially find a middle ground where you have the community, the village, so to speak, kind of helping single people get together?
Right. Well, it's a really interesting topic. It's a really interesting story. And Frady, thanks so much for your point of view on it, too. I've been speaking with WNYC's Arun Venugopal about his new multi-platform series, Micropolis. And we've been talking about arranged marriages also with Frady Reese. She left her arranged marriage and founded Unchained at Last, an organization that helps other women do the same. Arun, Frady, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.